Line it up, people. Let's go. Line it up.
Welcome, everybody, to the Battle of the Brothers, Utah Utes and BYU football podcast, where two brothers, one a true blue BYU Cougars fan, the other a diehard Utes fan, battle it out about BYU Cougars and Utah Utes football. I'm your host, C Double. Let me introduce you to our battling brothers. Our BYU fanboy is TC. Our Utes diehard is K Ray. So what's cracking, fellas?
Game for any fuss. Bring it on. Game for any fuss.
Hey, 1-0, we will take it. 1-0, we will take it.
All right, so first week of the season is in the books. So BYU and Utah both beat down some Wildcats. Now, let's talk about BYU's win first versus Arizona. So TC, give us the dirty. What are your thoughts on BYU's win?
So this was a game where Arizona was at one point a two-touchdown favorite when the odds first came out. So keep that in mind in the context of the game. No one gave BYU a chance to win. In fact, I think I even went on the KSL website, and they do a weekly pick'em where their staff picks various football games, including all the Utah teams. Not one member of the KSL staff, the same organization that owns that organization, owns the BYU football team. Not one member picked BYU to win, and not a lot of other experts. I think somebody noted that even on ESPN there was no takers on BYU either. So by all accounts, this was a legit upset by BYU. They did a lot of things right during the game, but what I really liked was at the end of the game, Kalani was being interviewed, and he acknowledged, hey, there was a lot of things they needed to clean up too. And there was. This was by no account was this a perfect game by BYU, even though they overcame some pretty big odds. So that was good to see acknowledged. And I think our offense sputtered a little bit. If you look at the third quarter, we'd really like to see every quarter executed like that, at least offensively. So I'll just highlight a couple things that I saw in the game that I don't think was covered a lot in the media. There was a lot of talk about our offensive and defensive line, et cetera. But a couple of things that I noticed were our cornerbacks were actually keeping up with receivers. I think a couple of years ago, these receivers would have had two, maybe three steps, and they would have been behind our cornerbacks. This game, even though there were a couple critical pass interference calls, our cornerbacks were right there playing with their receivers and able to break up a lot of big passes. So I think that's a big difference, something that the media really hasn't been picking up on a lot. And the other is our clock management. So ahead, fourth quarter, we started to kill the clock. And in years past, that's something that, for whatever reason, our coaching staff has not really utilized to our advantage, a lead in trying to kill the clock. And we did that. We executed that pretty well. And so that was really, really good to see. I think in years past, when we didn't do that, you know, Arizona probably would have gotten a last chance to win the game there at the end. So that was really good to see. So a lot of good things to come away with, but again, good that Kalani acknowledged that there were some things to clean up. So very excited to be 1-0. And I think BYU next week is actually favored to win against Cal by, I think, about a field goal. So we'll get into that a little bit later, but very excited about BYU's win.
Great point about the clock management. That is absolutely true. Now, real quick, Khalil Tate didn't run. He never broke off any big runs in the game. Was that because Arizona didn't plan any runs for him, or was that because of BYU's strategy on corralling him in?
Well, I think a little bit of both. I've never really focused on like a spying linebacker, but because of Tate's extreme athletic capabilities and all the hype about him going into the game, I actually kind of focused on that. And we always had one linebacker sitting back there just waiting to see what side he'd go to. And then that linebacker would just sprint to try to force him back into the side, back inside for help. So I think that played a pivotal role in containing him. But I will say there were a couple times where Tate rolled out and he only had, I mean, on one instance, you know, his brother Corbin Kaufusi was the only thing standing in between him and another 30 yards. So, and he chose to pass it. So I think it's probably a combination of both. There were a few key plays that he probably could have rattled off some big runs and chose to pass it. And keep in mind, he actually completed a couple of those plays. So I don't know if the focus on him turning him into kind of more of a passer was all that detrimental for Arizona, but it seemed like definitely that was the game plan.
Okay. All right, K-Ray, let's move to you. As a Utes fan, give us your thoughts on BYU's win in Tucson.
I was admittedly pretty impressed. Squally Canada. What happened to Squally Canada? Guy has 98 yards. I've never seen him run like that. I was really impressed with BYU's offensive line. Overall, as a team, they outperformed. I did not expect them to beat Arizona. I certainly did not expect them to dominate the third quarter, which they did. Pretty impressive. I mean, Corbin Kaufusi on defense, really, really, really good game. I think he had 7-8 tackles. He had a sack. He had a couple tackles for loss. And I thought Sione Takitaki was, guy was flying all over the place. I got to admit, I was surprised. It was sound football. Clearly more disciplined than I've seen BYU in a couple years since the Bronco era.
All right, there we go. There's our thoughts on the BYU game. Now let's move to the Utah versus Weber State game. But first, let's talk about Weber State's head coach, Jay Hill, and how our very own K-Ray knows head coach Jay Hill. Not only does he know him, he was actually his arch nemesis. Give us the story here.
Like any good story, it actually turns into a story as the years go by. Jay Hill would probably not remember me, but there was a time when we were competing for the affection of the same young lady, and we got into a scuffle on the basketball court. That was a long time ago. And actually, by all accounts, Jay Hill is a really, really good guy. He's done a lot of good stuff at Weber State. Obviously, he played at Utah, he coached at Utah. Most Utah fans, all Utah fans are huge Jay Hill supporters. He kind of started the Australian pipeline of special teams punters. He went down and got Tom Hackett, and now we've got Mitch from Australia as well. He's overcome some stuff personally in his personal life. His wife had cancer. Nothing but good to say about Jay Hill. But there was a time on the basketball court that we got into it for sure.
So who won the scuffle and who got the girl?
I think Jay won the scuffle and he probably got the girl as well, if I'm being honest.
And that's why he's the head coach and you're on the podcast talking
right.
about it. All right, so give us your thoughts on Utah's win, K-Ray. What do you think of their game?
First of all, I mean, are there areas for improvement? Yes. I mean, we were down 10-0 to an FCS team, which no Utah fan, myself included, wanted to see, obviously. I don't think any of us – I certainly didn't worry we'd win the game, but it's the future games we're worried about when we're down two scores. Our offensive line gave way a little bit the first quarter. They really kind of forced that interception, the first interception by Tyler Huntley, which led to an easy touchdown. But they came together. I mean, look, it's the first game of the season, and if I'm going to nitpick, I guess I'll pick on the first quarter. They came together so much that we had 294 rushing yards, including 150 by Zach Moss. he averaged almost 10 yards a carry. That was supplemented obviously by his 86-yard touchdown run, but the hole on that touchdown run was amazing. I mean, us three could have run through that hole. It was good to see. And then of course, Britton Covey is back. Covey is back.
He's back with a vengeance.
He looks good. I mean, he does. He looks good. It's interesting. There's all this talk about what does a mission do to the body, and maybe sometime on a future podcast we could talk about that. I think all three of us serve missions, if I'm not mistaken. I tell you what, he looked great. He looked really, really good. Tyler Huntley, look, he threw for 4 touchdowns. Very hard to nitpick that. Good game all around. Solid game. It's against an FCS opponent. It's what you would expect. I loved our defense, though. Our defense was lights out. Chase Hansen moved to linebacker. Obviously a great move. Marquise Blair was just killing people, blowing people up. The guy is amazing. Our cornerbacks, Julian Johnson, shut down. Again, how much of this is we don't know. We played Weber State, right? COC Mariner, our receiver with the most yards, great game. Solomon Enos, freshman, looks really good. Looks good. Nothing has changed my mind that we're gonna have a great season. So good first game. Glad it's under the belt.
There we go. Thoughts from TC on the Utes win. What do you have to say?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to find too much wrong besides the slow start that K-Ray's already pointed out. I mean, they were playing really, really well. The one player that really stood out was Blair to me. As K-Ray mentioned, he was blowing people up. I mean, they were playing so good for a while there. I thought that was like the Miami Hurricanes, and even the student section in Utah were throwing up the block U there. For the Hurricanes. I swear I even saw like a Hurricanes jersey up there.
Oh, jeez, give me a break. Give me a break.
So they were pretty impressive. The one thing I would say, two things is, the backup quarterback scares me more than Huntley does, to be honest. I mean, Kelly was just lightning fast, and Huntley still seems to be a little indecisive. There were a couple plays on the option where, you know, he was hesitating a little bit, and the Weber State players were getting into the backfield. But I think Utah's superior athletic ability, kind of overcame that. I'll be interested to see how Huntley adjusts moving forward. But, you know, Shelley actually really scares me. And the one thing I would say that Utah could improve upon is get the ball into Covey's hands more. I mean, I think he only touched it like 3 or 4 times. I mean, if I'm Utah, I'm wanting at least 8, 9, 10 times in that kid's hands. He is explosive. He's very quick. I mean, maybe they're trying to ease him back in because of the whole mission legs thing, but I don't really buy that. I think he's your most explosive weapon on offense. I would get him the ball way more. I know Moss had, 100 and some odd yards, but, 86 of those came on that long run. If you take away that long run, I mean, that was kind of a mediocre day. I'm not trying to take that away from him. I'm just saying, as a future opponent, if I'm playing Utah, I'd rather have Moss have the ball in his hands than Covey. I mean, but it's two really great weapons to have. So a lot to look forward to for Utah, I think, this season.
Yep. They definitely looked a little rusty, dusting off the cobwebs starting off, but they got it going. They got it going real good. And oh man, Britton Covey. Here's a quick question for you guys. Will we see him playing on Sundays eventually, or is he just too small? What do you guys think about Britton Covey's future NFL possible career?
I, I don't know. He seems kind of small to me. I mean, Wes Welker was small. Julian Edelman is small, but they also have some girth that Covey doesn't have.
They got some meat on their bones, for sure. Yeah. Well, Covey seems a little more quicker than them too. But yeah, that should be. He is a fun one to watch. Should be great. Great fun to watch.
You know what I've. What I've noticed about Covey is he kind of has that same move. I even watched some high school film of his. He runs right at the defender. He jabs right, and then he turns left. And you look at that really long run he had. He did that.
Yeah.
It must have been four times. And it's the same move, but, man, guys fall for that little jab, and then he cuts left every time. And, I mean, say what you will. I mean, if I'm an NFL coach, I want that kid on my team, and he might only last a half a season, but he'll be explosive when he gets the ball.
Yeah, that's that little jab that you talked about. That's the same move that burned you on in the last Turkey Bowl, I think, wasn't it, TC?
Yeah, and that's what landed you in the hospital.
Oh boy, the battle of the brothers continues. All right, so let's move to our next topic here. We were watching the Washington versus Auburn game, all three of us, and K-Ray was cheering for Washington because they are a member of the Pac-12. Now, me being an ASU graduate, I was cheering against Washington because they're a member of the Pac-12. So we got into a little debate, a little interesting topic here. When you're a member of a Power 5 conference, you can cheer against teams in your conference because all you need to do is win out and you're in. And it doesn't really matter what the other teams do. So the debate here is, do you cheer for other teams in your conference? TC, give us your thoughts on this topic as a fan of a school that isn't
part of your conference. Here we go. Oh, boy. Here we go.
Look. I've made my opinion to C Double and K Ray known on this. I think it's just a little funny that Utah cheers for every single Pac-12 team. I don't know why that is, but I mean, Utah, you've made it. You're in a Power 5 conference. All you got to do is win your games and you're in. You don't have to game the system like BYU does, where you got to play the highest ranked opponent possible. I just think it's a little funny that, you know, a lot of the paraphernalia that I see for Utah, you have a big Pac-12 sign and then you have a little little U sign in the corner. In fact, I was telling you guys over the weekend, I was at a Major League Baseball game and I was sitting a couple rows up and I saw this guy with a big Pac-12 t-shirt on the back. I had this big Pac-12 and I thought, who would wear a conference shirt like that? And I said, I got to see it. So I walked down a couple rows, and sure enough, the buddy he was sitting with was all decked out in Utah gear. I don't know, man. I roll my eyes a little bit. I congrats, Utah. You got in the Power 5 conference. We would love to be there, but come on. You don't have to be such homers where it, every single Pac-12 game is like, you know, the marquee matchup of the weekend. That's
great. All right, K-Ray, why do Utes fans cheer for the Pac-12 in every game?
Look, I've got some theories on that. Okay, let me break it down. I got three theories. Right, it's three theories. The first theory is we're still giddy to be in the Pac-12. All right, we really are. We couldn't be happier. I remember when we joined the Pac-12, there was a huge celebration up at the Utah State Capitol. And I was there, and Larry Scott came, and I mean,
I was there wearing my Pac-12 shirt.
Maybe that's where everybody got their t-shirts. They're handing out free Pac-12 t-shirts.
Trust me, I was there 5 minutes late, and they were gone. All right, the Pac-12 t-shirts were gone by the time I got there, which is maybe why I don't wear one. But we're still giddy. We're still happy to be there. That's the first theory. The second theory is we don't have a natural rival yet in the Pac-12. Colorado has been forced down our throats, but it's just not there. So, you know, you TC, you talked about Alabama versus Auburn, how they never cheer for each other. And you're right. I think you're probably right. Most fans don't of those two schools. But they've also been rivals for whatever, 150 years. I mean, yeah. however long they've been playing each other, they're in the same state. You have families that are divided. We just don't have that yet in the Pac-12. Certainly BYU is still our rival, which fortunately for us, three, or else we wouldn't have a podcast, right? I think the third reason is that I actually think that if you were to survey, let's say, SEC fans, they would rather have an SEC team win the national title than an ACC team or a Big Ten team or a Pac-12 team. I think even in other power conferences, I think there are loyalties there to the conference above and beyond what you've stated. So those are my three reasons that we cheer for other Pac-12 teams to do well. Plus, the obvious non-stated reason is that we play them and we want them to be ranked highly when we play them. So.
Yeah. Those are good valid reasons. That makes sense. We have another cousin of ours who was joking. You know, he's a big BYU fan. He was joking that Utah is the Vanderbilt of the Pac-12.
I agree. We are an academic powerhouse. I absolutely agree with that statement.
Touche. All right. So let's have your thoughts on next week's game. So let's go to TC. Give us your thoughts on BYU's upcoming game.
Well, speaking of cheering for the Pac-12, Cal is the only Pac-12 team that actually beat a Power 5 conference this past week. It was not a great showing for the Pac-12.
That's true.
But we will step up.
True.
We will take on the best Pac-12 team there is. And we'll courageously take that.
Mighty Cal Bears.
That's right. I think most BYU fans remember Cal from, I think it was our 2014 game against them where we beat them 42-35. So I remember watching that game. I was watching it with some family members, and we left a little early to go see Jimmer play because he was in town when he was still in the NBA. And I ended up looking at the phone, and the score just kept going up and up and up. I don't think it's going to be that type of game on Saturday. I think this might be a little bit more of a defensive struggle between both teams. The new Cal coach is actually the former Washington defensive coordinator. And if you look at some of the statistics that Cal put up versus North Carolina, they only allowed 38 total yards to the Tar Heels in the first half. They had four turnovers. Two of those set up touchdowns. One was returned for a touchdown. The other, they ran back to like the 20-yard line, and then they put it in. All of that, they almost lost that game. There was an onside kick that actually North Carolina recovered, and there was a penalty on the play, and that would have allowed North Carolina a chance to go down and either tie or win it at the end of the game. So they got out to a 24-3 lead, and they let North Carolina crawl back in it. So Cal's offense has not been prolific through one game. Who knows what that means. But that's partly due to the fact they still haven't settled on a quarterback. They had three quarterbacks play during that game. Their starter all of last season only played the first half. And when questioned on who the starter will be next game, he would not commit to a starter for BYU. I don't know if that's part of a guessing game or if they truly still have not settled on who their quarterback is going to be. So there's a lot of question marks, I think, for Cal going into the game. But one question mark that I do not think is there and has been answered is their defensive mentality. I think their head coach has brought in kind of a new mentality. And so that, along with BYU's defensive performance against, you know, arguably what some would say the best player in college football this year, I think we're in for a defensive tug of war on Saturday. Should be fun to watch.
All right. Now, Utes headed to the big city of DeKalb. I actually, speaking of missions, served a part of my mission in DeKalb at NIU campus. So let's hear your thoughts on going in to play the Huskies.
Yeah. So look, first of all, one of you two just said that Jimmer played in the NBA. That caught me. I lost everything you said after that. I'm trying to remember that.
What are you trying to take away the fact he did play in the NBA, or
no?
So long ago. I don't understand the point.
No, I thought he rode the bench in the NBA. Did he play? Did he get into a few games?
Funny you say that. The game that we went to, he actually never got into the game.
Oh no! I'll tell you what. I traveled to China for business. I think you all know this. Chimmer is huge in China. It's crazy.
Oh, yeah.
He's got his own line of shoes over there. I mean, it's crazy. In Jimmer's praise, I suppose. I'm not even sure how I got into that. But DeKalb, Northern Illinois. Look, why in the world did we schedule this game, right? I love Chris Hill. I love Dr. Hill. He's a hero. But come on, man. Why are we going to DeKalb, Illinois? It's not anywhere that we recruit. It's not anywhere where we have a huge fan base. And it's look, we're going to win this game, all right? Northern Illinois got worked by Iowa. Admittedly, first game of the season, the game was at Iowa, but the final was 33-7, and Northern Illinois only scored with 2 minutes left, garbage time touchdown. It's a nonsensical game from the standpoint of place of the game, and it's not a Power Five conference team we're playing. Having said that, it's a trap game, and that's probably part of the reason that I don't like it. Because you get a team like Northern Illinois in a non-Power Five conference, you get a Power Five school coming to town. You want to prove yourself, especially after getting beat badly by Iowa. I think we win. The starting quarterback for Northern Illinois, his QBR last week was 7.8, which is not good. That's not good. We're gonna win this game as long as we don't overlook it, and look forward to Washington next week.
It's funny you say that, because I was at the pool today with my family, and I saw a good friend of mine who's a huge Utah fan, and that was the one thing he said. He said, "Why are we playing Northern Illinois? Like, why are we going to Illinois to play this game?" So that's interesting. That was kind of your initial thought. I will say, wasn't the score only 3-0 at halftime in Iowa's favor? So, yeah. I don't pretend to know that much about Northern Illinois, but you know, they're only 11-point underdogs to you guys on Saturday. So I wonder if it is a bit more of a trap game than what most Ute fans are thinking.
Yeah, it could be. It certainly could be.
Yeah. Well, they had a good season, what, 2-3 years ago? 3-4 years ago, something. I mean, they were decent.
Yeah,
trap game. That's a great definition. Great definition of this game. Should be going. Hoping to see the Utes roll over them and prove their place in the Pac-12. So that's it for this week. That wraps up our topics. Next week, we'll be talking about, of course, this week's upcoming games. And another interesting topic, if UCF goes undefeated again, will they open the door for smaller or some mid-major schools to break into the playoffs? So TC's got some interesting thoughts on that he'll share with you. So until next week, peace.